You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Connor from Intelligence Squared. We have a special bonus episode for you today. We wanted to introduce you to a podcast we think you'll really enjoy. It's called Climate Solutions from our partners, the European Investment Bank. What would you give up to solve the climate crisis? Flights to exotic holiday destinations? Red meat? Your car? Well, Climate Solutions surveyed 30,000 people in every EU country, in China, the US and the UK, to find out what they're ready to do to fight climate change and whether facing the threat posed by COVID-19, they're even worried about climate change at all. The team at Climate Solutions then spoke to the experts about what it all means for the future of our planet. In this brand new episode of Season 2 of Climate Solutions, host Matt Rees and guests ask, has COVID-19 changed our behaviour in ways that might be good for climate change? Teleworking instead of commuting to an office means fewer carbon emissions and is therefore good for the climate. And what about the economic recovery? Are people just so desperate for an end to the COVID-19 recession that they want investment at any cost? Or do they want a green recovery? To find out more about Climate Solutions and to subscribe to the podcast, go to eib.org/podcasts or search Climate Solutions in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or where you get your podcasts. Now, let's go to the episode.
Climate change threatens every one of us. But what would you sacrifice if giving something up could solve the climate crisis? We've done a big survey in every European Union country, in China, in the US, and in Britain, to find out what people are ready to do to fight climate change, to understand what solutions they think will work, and whether they're even worried at all about climate change now that COVID-19 threatens us. Then we spoke to experts about what it all means for the future of our planet. I'm Matt, and this is Climate Solutions. Today, is COVID-19 good or bad for climate change?
It's like a paradox because they are concerned, they recognize the big problem, but they could not necessarily associate the causes of the problem to human activity. So there is still a lot of discussion, a lot of information needed to understand what causes what.
That's Martial Foucault, director of the Center for Political Research at Sciences Po, one of France's top universities. Martial is highlighting the root of many of the key questions in the climate debate over recent years. Scientists explain to us how dangerous climate change is, but some of us don't believe them. Or we believe them, but we don't think there's anything we can do about it. Maybe we just don't want to change our lifestyles, even if we realize that it's going to mean disaster for our children and grandchildren. The European Investment Bank carries out a massive survey every year to measure what we think about climate change and what we're prepared to do to fight it. This podcast series has exclusive access to the bank's latest survey data, and we found some fascinating and encouraging results. Before we dig into the data and listen to the experts explain what it means, let's remember that the survey was made during the COVID-19 crisis. What we wanted to know was whether COVID-19 would cause us to change our behavior in ways that might be good for climate change. For example, teleworking instead of commuting to an office means fewer carbon emissions and therefore it's good for the climate. And what about the economic recovery? Were people just so desperate for an end to the COVID-19 recession that they wanted investment at any cost? Or did they want a recovery that pumped funds into sustainable businesses that didn't damage the environment, what's called a green recovery? Adelaide Zulfikar-Pasic is the director of opinion polling at BVA, the Paris-based company that carried out the survey for the European Investment Bank.
About the green recovery, there were differences between within Europe itself, because if a majority of Europeans consider that the government's priority should be the green recovery, the results mask important disparities. With some countries such as France, Luxembourg, Germany, or Spain or Malta, who clearly think that the fight against climate change must be a part of economic recovery. And in the other hand, other countries, including Greece, Denmark or Sweden, who were in favor of recovery by any means. The biggest surprise for me was the fact that a huge majority of Chinese citizens believe that the priority of their national government must be to support a green recovery. I was surprised, I was also surprised that China was the only country where climate change remains the first challenge this year.
So that's a range of countries that favor a green recovery, but some others that want recovery at any cost. Something jumped out at me. Greeks wanted any kind of recovery. At first I thought that's fair enough, because they've had many years of economic troubles and they're desperate. But Swedes and Danes also didn't care about whether the recovery was green. Sweden's not a poor country, or in economic difficulties, neither is Denmark. I asked Adelaide what that was about.
In thousand countries, especially, that may also be the poorest one, people feel more the impact of climate change on their everyday lives. And other countries like Sweden and Denmark, I think that people don't feel really the impact of climate change. And so, in fact, we observed in last year's survey and also this year that they are less concerned about climate change, on contrary to what we could expect. It's these countries are more culturally concerned by climate change. Their political policies are turned to climate change, to fight against climate change. But people individually are less concerned than people in some thousand and sometimes poorest countries.
So it's about how much we feel climate change in our lives too, not just our wallets. And that's where the survey shows some very interesting results. In 2019, climate change showed on the survey as the biggest concern people had for the future of the world, but it took a long time to get to that top position. People knew about climate change for a long time, but they had finally started to feel it in their own lives in the form of very hot summers, floods, and storms. Now, our survey shows that 75% of Europeans feel the impact of climate change on their daily lives. That compares to 72% of Americans and 94% of Chinese. And as Adelaide noted, it differs across Europe. 45% of Danes feel climate change in their daily lives, but 92% of Italians feel it, and it stands at 95% among Romanians. We felt COVID a lot more quickly, of course, and so it vaulted to the top of the list of concerns. But climate remains firmly on that list, and that's why most people tell us that they want a green recovery.
The health crisis is it is acute. We're seeing the economic consequences of it. On top of it, we're also seeing increasing evidence about the impacts across different parts of society.
Edward Calthrop is head of the Climate Policy Unit at the European Investment Bank in Luxembourg.
There was a very, very interesting report from Oxfam, which is making the point that the pandemic has exacerbated inequalities across all countries, actually, for the first time ever. Whether that's measured by wealth or gender or race. So, I think you can only have enormous sympathy that people are indicating they're primarily worried about COVID and catching COVID right now. I'm not sure I draw that from that there's any sort of opposition to the idea of investing when we're thinking about investment as a way out of the economic crisis, that we're looking for investments that are not only producing quick wins in terms of job creation and so-called economic multipliers, but that are also meeting the long-term challenge, which with 30 years to go, frankly, is not such a long-term challenge. And in fact, many of these investments are, asset lives will be 20 years. So it's a pretty immediate challenge of addressing climate change issues. So I don't overread too much. I think it's a bit of a false dichotomy between the two. I mean, my own take on actually seeing the other parts of the survey is the two, you get these two fairly clear messages, actually, that people have understood and are seeing the impacts of climate change now. There's an overwhelming support for reorientating the economy. So I think the two go hand in hand. And I mean, if anything, probably the overriding lesson from the pandemic, at least for me, and echoed by many from the climate community, is that we have to learn that we cannot ignore known risks. We did that to some extent with the COVID pandemic, and there is still a risk that we do that with the longer term climate change risk.
64% of Europeans said natural disasters were their top climate-related concern. That's compared to environmental damage and rising temperatures in second and third places. Well, this series is called Climate Solutions, so I asked Ed Qualthrop what the European Investment Bank, the EU Climate Bank, is doing to counter the effects of climate change, the effects that people are already feeling through natural disasters around the world. There's a lot, of course, it's the EU Climate Bank, but here's what Ed said about something called adaptation. Adaptation is when people adapt their infrastructure to the climate threat with, say, better flood defenses or bridges that don't get swept away when there's a big rainstorm.
We've been financing these kind of projects for a number of years. I think the good news is last year, 2020, we've actually doubled our volume of support. So we've moved to 2 billion of support out of an overall envelope of about 24 billion for climate action as a whole. So that's positive. But of course, 2 billion is still a very small amount. Essentially we're looking at three types of ways that we can really help support this agenda. The first is actually to ensure that all of the projects we're financing are well adapted to future climate change. This is the most obvious point. So we are systematically doing that. That means in practice we will screen projects to see where they're potentially exposed to higher risks of climate change in the future. We'll engage with the promoter, with the client on that. Potentially we'll try to understand how they've addressed it. Potentially we can even assist in going through more technical steps, and referred to as climate risk and vulnerability assessment, to really try and identify those risks and think about ways of mitigating them. But that's essentially, that's the first point. We've mainstreamed it into our operations. Second point is really one of using our resources to try to push innovation in this area. And that, that can mean many different things. That's partly around, RDI, working to support the development of, let's say, crops that are resistant to droughts. It's partly about working with governments to develop programs develop and to deal with disaster risk management and extreme weather events. We have a very interesting operation now in Greece. It's partly working with the private sector. We're working with a fund effectively to tap private sectors, to support private sector companies that can, are using data and technology-enabled services to help people to react, and companies to react to these type of events. We're looking at dedicated credit lines, working, for instance, with farmers in Africa, in Kazakhstan, in numerous countries. The third point really then would be around building knowledge and sharing knowledge, and that's the advisory agenda. And there again, we're looking at ways we can work with partners, be they cities, be they private sector. Because for many organizations, they're really at the beginning of this curve. So they may have very little in place to think through what are the future climate risks and how might they be addressed. So that's, again, the sort of third element. all of that needs to be wrapped into, I mean, the EU will come forward this year with a new adaptation strategy. And so we will actually take stock of that and come forward with our own adaptation plan to, in some sense, cement those 3 points that I've just made.
So people really do see the threat of climate change. But what impact does COVID have on all this? One result of the COVID crisis is that people have been ready to accept very strong measures imposed by their governments to fight a crisis situation. That willingness seems to have extended to the idea that big changes might need to be imposed to fight the other big crisis, climate change.
It is true that the drastic restrictions on freedom and changes in behavior imposed during the pandemic in order to fight the virus may have made some citizens think about what they are willing to do or not for the community and the general interest. And a majority of them say that they would be ready to accept strong government measures to combat climate change.
I wondered if this would make people more positive about their ability to stop climate change. You know, because they had seen that their personal behavior, wearing masks, social distancing, not visiting grandparents, had a positive impact on the lives of others, perhaps even saved the lives of others. Would they in turn feel more positive about their ability to improve the lives of their children by taking action against climate change? But there is evidence that people will sacrifice some potential economic growth in favor of building a cleaner economy for the future.
Yes, people are really happy or maybe let's say are really ready to slow down the economic recovery by taking climate into consideration as part of the recovery plan because of this long-term phenomenon and consciousness of the issue.
Subscribe to Climate Solutions so you don't miss any of the results of the climate survey or the explanations from our experts. You can also read the full results of the climate survey at eib.org, eib.org. In the next episode of Climate Solutions, you'll find out whether people are more prepared to give up their cars, the trip of a lifetime, or a juicy, tasty sausage to save humanity from climate change. So find out whether you're willing to give up the same things others are, or if you're some kind of statistical outlier, on the next episode of Climate Solutions from the European Investment Bank, the EU Bank.